It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We head to Capitol Hill with Republican U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District in the northeastern part of the state. Call in with your questions about federal debt limits, national security, anything else on your mind in national politics. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Congressman Mike Gallagher's district includes Green Bay and the Fox Valley. Representative Gallagher, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the debt limit. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the nation could reach its debt limit as early as tomorrow. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy saying he wants budget cuts in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. Where are lawmakers at in reaching a deal in time?
I think what makes sense to me is to pair, if we're going to raise the debt ceiling again, traditionally it's been paired with some sort of fiscal reform. So the question is less, can you get an immediate cut, and more, can you reform the process such that we don't find ourselves in this debt ceiling chicken every year or every 2 years? It's like Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football and nothing ever changes. So to me, what I would prefer to see is pairing a debt ceiling increase with something called the Trust Act. That's a bill I have. It's bipartisan in the Senate. It would basically set up a series of rescue task forces for all the trust funds that are going insolvent. I'd also be in favor of a reform to the process so we do budgeting on a biannual basis. My predecessor, Reid Ribble, led the charge on that. That would just make it so much easier to get budgeting done in a sensible, sober manner. The other thing I'd be in favor of is something called the No Budget, No Pay Act, which basically says if we don't pass budgets on time, if we don't do our basic blocking and tackling of doing 12 separate appropriations bills, we, as members of Congress, don't get paid. And I guarantee you, once the pay dries up, suddenly members of Congress will find a solution to these issues. So I think pairing a debt ceiling increase with sensible and hopefully bipartisan reforms to what is indisputably a very dysfunctional process makes sense to me.
Is letting the federal government default on its debts an option at this point?
Well, that's not the preferred outcome. Obviously, there's a lot of brinksmanship that goes into this. I've been part of, I don't know, at least two government shutdowns during my 6 years in Congress. But I think letting it default would have a bad impact on our credibility globally. It would have a negative economic impact. So that's certainly not an outcome anybody wants to see. But it requires both sides to come to the table in good faith, right? And listen to the American people. You got to look at the last election and try and understand what was the message the American people were sending to us. Well, obviously, we have divided government. We have a narrow majority in the House of Republicans. We have a Democratic-controlled Senate and White House. So neither side's going to get 100% of what they want. It's as if the American people have, you know, forced us to sit in the car, but haven't given either party keys to that vehicle. So I think we need to internalize that and approach these discussions with, you know, not only a sense of what is best for the health of the country over the long term, but a little bit of humility always goes a long way here.
There are reports that Speaker McCarthy is open to cuts in military defense spending to hold the budget to the federal 2022 levels. And, you know, you sitting on the House Armed Services Committee, would you accept defense cuts to get a budget deal done?
I would not. I don't think now is the time to be cutting defense. And quite honestly, any budget resolution that attempts to cut defense is dead on arrival in the House. What I'd be open to is a budget resolution that keeps defense at 858 plus 3% to account for just natural growth and inflation, and then finding a way to discover efficiencies on the non-defense discretionary side. That being said, there's a lot of efficiencies we can find in the Pentagon. I'm open to a process whereby we reduce some of the redundant bureaucracy. In fact, the biggest military service branch right now is not the Army, it's not the Navy, it's DoD civilians. It's grown by over 100,000 people since 9/11. When the reverse has happened to active duty military, it's decreased by over 100,000 people. We have all these, you know, flag officers and general officers sitting in the Pentagon and the E-ring. The joint staff is over 5,000 people. Office of Secretary of Defense, over 5,000 people. That bureaucracy can certainly be reduced. It's just not going to provide you an immediate saving. But I'm open to a process whereby we reduce the bureaucracy and use those efficiencies to invest in hard power that we need to deter a war, particularly a war with China over Taiwan. But now is not the time to be cutting defense indiscriminately across the board.
So let me understand this. So if you go back to fiscal 2022 spending levels and you don't touch the defense budget, then you mentioned non-defense discretionary programs. What types of programs would you consider to be excessive or that have ability to be trimmed?
Well, it's all hypothetical at this point. We're dealing with overall numbers. I haven't seen a proposal, and I'm not on the budget committee, that says we're going to cut X, we're going to cut Y, we're going to cut Z. But we have injected, I mean, as a matter of fact, a ton of money, trillions of dollars into domestic spending via COVID dollars. So I think we need to understand where that was duplicative with existing non-defense spending and where certain programs just simply aren't working. We're struggling right now, for example, to process the amount of money that we've invested in so-called infrastructure. We don't have the workforce necessary to build roads, bridges, things like that. So I'm confident there are efficiencies there, but I can't tell you right now without looking at a specific proposal, okay, we're going to get rid of this, get rid of that, and that's going to result in XYZ savings.
Talking about national debt with Mike Gallagher, 8th District House Representative covering Green Bay and the Fox Valley. You can join in along the way, 800-642-1234. Let's turn to TikTok. Last week, Democratic Governor Tony Evers here in Wisconsin banned the social media app TikTok on most state government devices. And the order left some exceptions, like the UW system, for instance. Does the ban go far enough to ease your concerns?
No, I mean, I have a bill, a bipartisan bill, actually, with a Democrat from Illinois. That's a total ban, not just a government ban. I mean, I'm glad that Governor Evers took this step. The exception for the UW system makes no sense to me. And I think the next step to take is not only to close that loophole, but for the governor to lead by example and close down his campaign TikTok account, which I think would be a positive step forward. The real fundamental issue is this. Given TikTok's ownership structure, TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is a Chinese company. And at least since 2017, but going back before that, any Chinese company is subject to the whims of the Chinese Communist Party. In many cases, they have CCP cells embedded in their corporate governance structure. The head of ByteDance has promised to make sure that all future product lines follow appropriate political direction from the CCP. So what that means is that the CCP controls what is on the cusp of becoming the most powerful media company in America. That doesn't seem like a good idea to me. And add on to that the fact that these apps are highly addictive. They're increasing anxiety, depression, and suicide among America's youth. I think we either need to go for a total ban or a forced sale to an American company that provides greater transparency around control of the algorithm. And of course, in America, we have a concept of a private company that simply doesn't exist in the same way in China.
But would banning TikTok solve these broader security issues over what you're concerned about, you know, data privacy, data mining, these harmful algorithms that you talk about? What about banning TikTok would solve those types of issues?
Well, I think it would solve the immediate issue of having the Chinese Communist Party control what news Americans see on a day-to-day basis. The best analogy would be it's as if in 1958 we allowed the KGB and Pravda to buy WPR, the Chicago Tribune, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, New York Times, Washington Post. That probably actually understates the magnitude of the problem. So it would solve that immediate problem, but you're right to suggest that we're still going to have lingering concerns about control of data, privacy, et cetera. So where we need to head after this is to figure out what is the appropriate regulatory structure for cross-border data flows. There's something right now called the ICTS process. It's, you know, it started at the end of the Trump administration. The Biden administration continued it. It's very nascent. It's kind of the Wild West right now when it comes to cross-border data flows. And so could we work with our allies in order to establish a transparent data regulatory framework that allows for innovation and doesn't engender national security concerns? I think we can. And if you listen to a speech that former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan gave before he was tragically killed, he talked about such a model, something he called data free flow with trust. So if we solve the immediate national security risk posed by TikTok, I think then we need to transition to a discussion about what's the appropriate international and interstate regulatory framework that preserves innovation, and privacy while mitigating national security risks.
One more follow-up here. You have said before that you're going to be meeting with TikTok. What is on your agenda?
Well, I am open to them making the argument that they have various safeguards in place such that, you know, we shouldn't be concerned about, you know, algorithmic manipulation or tracking locations. However, they've said in the past, in recent past, that they weren't, there's no example of them using TikTok's ability to track your location. And then we just had a Forbes article 2 weeks ago that convincingly laid out how they're using that very feature to track journalists' locations, because journalists had sources inside TikTok, you know, providing information for stories that shed a negative light on TikTok. So thus far, they have not been transparent. They've not been candid, but I want to engage them in a debate. And if they have a counter argument that I've not thought of, well, that will improve this whole discussion. But now is the time to confront this head on again, before we allow the Chinese Communist Party to control the largest and most powerful media company in America.
Republican Representative Mike Gallagher, District, the northeastern part of the state, with us on the pressing issues before the 118th Congress as House Republicans get down to business. Call in with your questions, your thoughts for the congressman at any time, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with U.S. Republican Representative Mike Gallagher, whose district covers Green Bay and the Fox Valley. He's served on the House Armed Services Committee and on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Let's take a call now. JJ in Kakana. JJ, what's on your mind?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a comment that I thought it was kind of disingenuous for the Representative Gallagher to say that the American people have given him a car but not the keys. I think if you look at the elections, it's the opposite. What the American people are looking for is compromise. And to be honest, I think the majority of American people are quite tired of the divisiveness between both parties, and we need to work across the aisle and come to some compromise and work together. We do it in our daily lives, in our household, and everywhere else, and we expect the people that we hire to do the job to come to find some resolution. And I can take my comment off the air.
JJ, thank you. Representative Gallagher, how will you work across the aisle?
Well, perhaps I used the wrong metaphor, because certainly that was the intent of what I was trying to communicate. I think I said that neither side is going to get 100% of what they want, so there's going to inevitably be compromise in divided government to get anything done. So I was trying to be ingenuous with that metaphor, but I apologize for not being clear. If you look at my record, particularly on national security issues, I've been able to work across the aisle in order to get stuff done. And for this select committee on China that I'm going to be chairing in this Congress, Speaker McCarthy has given me the direction of ensuring that it is a bipartisan effort. And that's something I intend to fulfill. And I think when it comes to securing our country, when it comes to defending our country from authoritarian or totalitarian aggression, that shouldn't be a Republican only or a Democrat only thing. We just had a discussion about TikTok. I work hard to make sure that the bill I introduced was bipartisan. And so I'm proud that it is. And I want to increase the number of Democrats and Republicans on the issue. Now, that being said, I'm not Pollyannish about the ability to solve every problem in divided government. There are certain things we're just not going to be able to resolve in the next 2 years. But again, I think with a spirit of humility and working hard on behalf of the American people, there's some really important things we can get done over the next 2 years. We don't have time to waste. I don't want to waste the next 2 years.
Let's bring in John in Boaz. John, hi.
Hi. I wanted to ask the senator, how much money are we giving to Ukraine for fighting the war? And I think it's about $150 billion, and American people are concerned about our budget.
John, thank you for that question. Aid to Ukraine, Representative Gallagher.
Well, first, I'm not a senator. I think I'm far too young to be a senator. We've given a lot of aid to Ukraine. The number is less than $150 billion thus far. In terms of total outlays, it's closer to $50 billion. And quite honestly, I understand the concern. That's a lot of money. And in particular, we want some of our European allies who talked tough at the beginning of this crisis to step up. Germany stands out in terms of a country that really hasn't yet fulfilled some of the commitments that they made. So we are appropriately in the leadership position. We're the leader of the free world, and we do this because it's in our own interest. But of course, we want our allies to step up and do more. That being said, we have some allies that have done a lot. Poland, some of the Baltic states have really invested a lot in this fight. Ultimately, I think this is a sound investment for U.S. national security, because not only are we defending a country from authoritarian aggression, not only are we taking one of our biggest geopolitical competitors down several notches in the process, and we're doing it without U.S. boots on the ground in harm's way, but we're also simultaneously dealing a blow to the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, Putin and Xi Jinping signed a no-limits partnership before the invasion. And I think we make the mistake of isolating these two problem sets from each other. And if deterrence were to collapse even further in Ukraine, or if we were to allow Russia to completely take over Ukraine, I think it would give Xi Jinping a massive green light to make a move on Taiwan. And then we would find ourselves in a really, really serious and dangerous situation, the likes of which we haven't seen since World War II. So we have to be judicious with this money. We have to ensure there's appropriate oversight. We can't just keep spending without any transparency into where it's going. But ultimately, I think this is a sound investment in our own security.
Do you feel like your fellow Republicans are on board with furthering commitments to Ukraine?
Some are more skeptical, but I think it's incumbent upon people like me in leadership positions and committees in the House to really tease out the connection between communist China and Putin's Russia, and to explain to people how these countries have been waging a cold war against us for the better part of a decade, and we're just now waking up to that fact. Listen, it would be great if we could kind of do a reverse Nixon goes to China and triangulate the Russians against the Chinese. There's just no realistic prospect for that happening in the near future. And any idea that we could balance Russia against China right now, I think, is a naive fantasy. Though it would be a nifty act of geopolitical ledger domain, it's just not possible at present.
Mike Gallagher with us, 8th District House Representative covering Green Bay and the Fox Valley. Let's go back to the phones now. Margaret in Kakana. Margaret, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I was wondering why you guys thought it was fiscally prudent and to strip the IRS of its money when it has been starved for workers for the last 10 years. I personally have had my taxes held up for 2 years because of IRS being understaffed. And every time I call, I have to wait so long, not because they're inefficient, because they are so swamped and understaffed because Congress has defunded them for the last 12 years.
Margaret, thank you. House passed the first piece of legislation. The House passes that IRS bill. Representative.
Well, the concern on our side, and according to CBO, is that you're going to see audit rates rise for all taxpayers, and particularly audit rates would mean about 1.2 million more audits, with over 700,000 of those falling on taxpayers making $75,000 or less. So we don't want to see and a disproportionate economic burden applied to middle-class Americans, lower-class Americans, people that are struggling right now, particularly as we come out of the pandemic. I think a more sensible strategy going forward would be to simplify the tax code such that you don't need to hire an army of IRS agents in order to force that tax code. And that's the real issue going forward. The complexity of the tax code is what is maddening and what allows for the IRS bureaucracy to grow. It's what allows for certain people to, you know, hire their own mini platoons of lawyers in order to avoid IRS agents. That to me is the real issue going forward, but we just don't want to see the IRS go after middle-class Wisconsinites going forward.
And very quickly, we only have a few seconds left. What is the most pressing issue that you're working on in this term of Congress?
It's China. I'm chairing the Select Committee on China, figuring out how we not only deter war in the near term, but position ourselves to win this long-term competition, I think, is the challenge of my generation. And figuring out how to communicate the stakes of this competition in a way that resonates with people in Northeast Wisconsin and not just sort of an obscure think tank discussion is really a challenge I think we got to solve over the next 2 years. This is, as I've said, I believe the early stage of a new Cold War. And right now, it's not apparent to me that we're winning.
Congressman Gallagher, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mike Gallagher, Republican U.S. Representative for Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. If you missed any part of the conversation, go to WPR.org/mornings. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.